Good morning, everyone. Mary Griffith Show is underway. It is a Tuesday, the first Tuesday of the month, and that means Catherine Bakimekas is here to talk about the Community Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Mary.
And we've been isolated for so long. You look very different than the last time I saw you. Your baby bump. You've got a baby bump.
You know, you go into quarantine and you come out a different person.
This was pre-COVID-19.
It was
pre-COVID. But thank you for coming in, and we wish you all the best health. I'm sure you've already got one child, so you're not quite the nervous first mom, but it's just share with me. Are you frightened about COVID being pregnant? I imagine it comes to your mind.
I was so glad the spring. I was like, oh, I'm so glad I'm not having a baby now, when it was all new and happening and all. And surely by October this will all be cleared up, but it's not looking that way. So, yeah, I mean, of course, a little anxiety in the back of the mind, but
you might have to go it alone in the delivery room.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, at least it's not the first. So,
yeah.
Well, we'll count our blessings there, but
well, I'm restraining from having a baby, too, during COVID-19. I'm doing so well.
For the best.
My husband and I got married so late in life. We love to joke about, I think one of the questions they still ask you when you get married is, will you accept children willingly and lovingly from God? And I said, I will. Father told me we could claim it as a miracle and get him up in heaven. Yeah, okay. Well, let's talk a little bit today about the Community Foundation. We just had the United Way on a week ago, and they were talking about how they have that COVID-19 relief fund. You're part of that as well, a little bit different variation of that. Before we get into education scholarships, which is what we want to talk about today, let's talk about COVID-19 relief. It seems to me that the COVID-19 relief plan is going to have to go on for a little bit longer. So where are we now, and what should people be doing? Some people have really toughed it out. They're pretty stoic here in the tri-states, but now it's starting to really cause some problems.
Yeah, so we have a few different programs that have been going on since late March to help with the COVID situation. One of those was a fairly large effort through the Illinois COVID Relief Fund. We applied for and received $400,000 worth of funding to help Adams, Brown, Hancock, and Pike, and that was distributed back in April and early May. So that one is done. So that was $400,000 that went to your basic human needs, just to help those agencies expand their services for your food, shelter, things like that, that folks are really going to be worse struggling and are going to continue struggling with.
Part of that was just buying personal protective equipment for your volunteers.
That's right. Healthcare, gear, cleaning products, just those basic things that we need to keep our community safe. And so that particular fund at this point has been depleted from the larger state pool. They did several rounds of grants. We were awarded grants in the first and third round of that. They had a fourth, but it was a separate focus. So we'll see if something reignites there the longer this goes on. We also have our own kind of smaller local fund that we established with some of our unrestricted dollars, which are very precious to us. Typically, we use all of our unrestricted dollars for our competitive grants, which we will be awarding later this month. But we saw a need now, and our donors entrust us with those unrestricted funds to use them where it is needed most. And at that point in time, we said, I think our donors would like us to help now instead of, asking nonprofits to wait until mid-August to get relief. So we opened up a funding stream for grants up to $2,500, and nonprofits can apply. Basically, any nonprofit that's impacted by COVID-19, whether you were on the front lines or whether you just had to shut your doors and you're struggling for operating support.
Or whether you're not getting the donations that you used to get and you're still open.
That's right.
And struggling to serve people with less money.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So, and we did kind of have three different priorities for that. So, of course, we wanted to get those dollars to where it was going to help the most people first. So, if there's an agency that was seeing an increase in the demand for food, that kind of took top priority, and then we kind of trickled down. We still have some funding in that smaller pool, so if nonprofits still need some help, which I'm sure they do, or will start to soon, I mean, the longer this goes on, you can find more information on that at mycommunityfoundation.org.
Well, the problem is, of course, all the fundraisers, most of them have been canceled. And so, and even if you have something, people are reluctant to go to it. So this will continue on mycommunityfoundation.org. Today, our focus, Catherine, is going to be on education. But one thing that is very critical, hats off to the people who said, well, I just want to help my community. And I can't even fathom whether it'd be, they probably thought a flood or a tornado. I don't think anybody thought about a viral pandemic. But they had enough foresight to say, here today when I make this fund, I can't imagine what the needs will be, but I want to make sure it stays in our community. So I'm going to let the board of directors decide what's critically important that year at that time. And because you have those unrestricted funds, you were able to react very quickly and help a lot of people. And that's what the donors wanted. They couldn't envision that this would be what the money was used for, but they knew that it would be something that hit our community as a crisis.
That's right, and that's why those unrestricted dollars are so important to us. And I just want to make it clear that these are endowed dollars. So that's what kind of sets the Community Foundation in a unique position, in that we are the only public nonprofit that builds these permanent funds. So donors come to us. In general, they want to create a fund that is going to be there forever. So we invest those funds, and then a portion of the earnings is redistributed each year. So, you know, the $20,000 that we invested into this fund, none of it was the actual principal. So those are earnings. And so the base of those funds is going to be there. It's going to be there next year. It's going to continue to grow. And the wonderful thing is, you know, our community is so generous. Our region is so generous. So the modest amount that we were able to put into this COVID fund, we were able to leverage into about $80,000 through generous donors throughout the region.
And so that is something to keep in mind. If you are doing some estate planning and you want to make sure that a portion of your estate does indeed stay in our community in perpetuity. Because one thing we have seen, and we've talked about this before, children move away, and certainly parents want to give the vast amount of their wealth, I'm sure, to their children. But you're also giving the wealth then to another community. And just keeping 5% of your earned wealth throughout your lifetime in our community makes all the difference in the future of our community. So that's
absolutely
an important aspect of it. Well, today we are going to talk about different ways that you can be part of the Community Foundation. Scholarships for students is one of the more popular funds within the Community Foundation, but it's only one way, one of many ways, that you can support education. So I guess we'll start with the tried and true. Endowing a scholarship in somebody's name so that a nursing student or a journalism student or just someone in a county living in that county mm-hmm. that wants to pursue higher education, whatever that may be, can go on and continue. That's a very common and popular way for the Community Foundation to get money.
Absolutely. We hold several different scholarships for several different communities, several different high schools. And we love them. They're wonderful. I think that's generally top of mind when someone thinks of a way that they can help further education, somewhere that they can leave a legacy and help another student along the way. And they're great. We love administering those. We love hearing what the recipients, the students, do in the future. You know, you can specify that you want it to be a nursing student, or you want it to be someone studying math and engineering, or whatever it might be. And so that's a really great way to do it, but it's not the only way. And so when someone comes to us and expresses that they want to help further education, sometimes a scholarship is the best way to do that, depending on their goals. But we also want to think about the different aspects of how to impact education. When you're thinking about a scholarship, you're usually thinking about one, maybe two students a year. That student or students generally is a lot of times going to leave the region to go to school at U of I or University of Missouri or wherever that might be.
Which is where the money is going to go.
Which is where the money is going to go. So all of our scholarship funds, you know, a portion of that's going to stay local. We have a fund for example, for a Quincy University student. But most of the time when we're writing those checks, it's going regionally or across the entire country. And that's wonderful because that's a local student getting to pursue their dreams. But we also know, you alluded to this before, a lot of times when students leave and they go to college and they meet someone and they, you know, they're in a different city, a lot of times they don't come back. So, you know, we see this money leave, then we see talent leave, and hopefully that student comes back and blesses us with their knowledge and their, you know, what they learned and their skills. But unfortunately, a lot of times that does not happen.
And so this is one way you can think about that. Maybe you do want to say, I don't care what you study, but I want it to be for Quincy University or Hannibal LaGrange or Culver Stockton or even Western or something local. Or I don't mind if you go to the University of Illinois, but I want you to study this certain field. Or maybe it's just, I don't even care if you go to college, because technical school has really come on the rise, apprenticeships and certification programs. And again, when you work with the Community Foundation to make a permanent endowment, you have to use some language, and they'll help you with this. You have to use some language that will allow things to change for things you can't even imagine. If, for example, there was a specialized, I'm just making this up now, but let's say there was a specialized kind of nursing that you could go to school for 2 months and you would only learn how to do that very special thing, but that very special thing is much needed, then that would be the kind of thing rather than a two-year nursing program. But you don't know that that's going to be invented in 20 years from now. So the Community Foundation really helps donors take their dreams and really allow them to dream beyond the boundary of what dreaming can be right now.
That's right. So it really comes back to what that donor wants to achieve. And so we'll sit down, we'll talk about, you know, what makes them tick. You know, what are they really trying to impact? What are their goals? And then, you know, we do have to do some visioning and think about if you make it so specific, it makes it difficult to even give away that money sometimes.
Right.
So we want to include some flexibility into that. But, you know, some things we want to think about is there an area of school that you want to make an impact in? So say literacy is incredibly important to you. You could create a fund for a specific school or for the entire region. The options are endless. That provides funding for helping kids learn to read. We have a fund called the Raymond Norbert and Eleanor Reuter Fund, where Eleanor came to us and she simply said, "I want to help kids read." And so from that, it's come into this wonderful fund that allows us to strategically use these dollars it's kind of been. A lot of the grants have been to our more rural schools who need a little more support, mm-hmm. but to implement tutoring programs and intensive training programs for teachers to help those kids learn to read. And sometimes these kids are first-generation readers. So just imagine the impact that Eleanor's legacy has on these schools and on these students. And that's, again, something because it's endowed, there's going to be funding there each and every year to help kids learn to read, to meet her goal.
And maybe that was hiring that specialist or putting in a mentoring program where the mentors don't get paid, but there's a little perk for them, maybe a gasoline card or something. It really, the imagination then can start to roll. As long as the purpose is achieved, the means do justify the ends, in that case. And so there's so many different things. You also mentioned many people have a lot of loyalty to their local school district, and certainly helping students or giving money so that a group can purchase something for the school or do something for the school that is above and beyond what maybe property tax dollars would do.
Yes, and you hear so often about teachers who have to spend their own money to purchase special classroom supplies. They're not even special classroom supplies. They need to use their own money to buy their colored pencils and Kleenex or whatever it might be. So when budgets are getting slashed, especially in our rural communities, something wonderful could be to endow a fund that helps teachers buy those supplies. Or maybe it's art that you love. And again, art programs are often the first on the chopping block when we're thinking about budget cuts. So having an endowed fund that each and every year provides a grant to that school district or to that specific school or to that specific grade. Again, we can, the, it ranges on how specific you can be, to be able to purchase those art supplies to keep an art program going. Again, it's limitless depending on the imagination, the passion, the goals of the donor. We can really create a special fund that's going to meet those needs.
Our topic today is the Community Foundation. You can go to mycommunityfoundation.org to learn more about the Community Foundation. We're talking today about scholarships and education. And if you'd like to help education in general, there are so many different ways that the Community Foundation can work with you. And remember, these are permanent endowed gifts, gifts that stand the test of time. 9:34 our time, we're going to head up to the Ursa Farmers Cooperative, see what's happening on the farm markets. We'll return, and our conversation continues. Perhaps you have a question or comment about how the Community Foundation works. Perhaps you're not quite sure what the Community Foundation does or how you could either get funds from the foundation or contribute funds to the foundation. Our phone lines are open at 223-9300, 1-800-228-WTAD. We're back, Talk Radio 930 WTAD. My guest today is Catherine Meckes. She is the director of the Community Foundation, serving West Central Illinois and Northeast Missouri, not just Quincy. As she will be quick to tell us, this is a community foundation that serves our entire area and does so very well. We're talking a little bit today about the specific topic of wanting to help improve education or learning in our area, and so many ways to do that. Scholarships for teachers, money for individual school districts, funds that are targeted at a specific math program or art program or music program or a certain age group. It's really endless what you can do, and that's where the Community Foundation comes in. So give us some examples, please.
Absolutely. So this is a fairly new fund we have, and I just think it's incredibly neat. Have you ever been to Canton, Missouri?
I lived there for a year.
I figured you might have been there, but Martin Park.
Yes,
are you familiar?
Of course.
There's a little brick building in Martin Park.
Right.
Okay. So do you know what that building is for? Or was for?
That's not the old schoolhouse.
It is the old schoolhouse.
Yeah.
Yes. So it was known as the Lincoln Colored School.
Right. It was segregated.
Segregated from 1866 to 1955. And after 1955, of course, segregation ended, and the building kind of fell into disrepair. It was used as a storage place for a while. It kind of sat around and degraded a bit. And in the past few years, a wonderful family in Canton, really had a lot of love and for the history of that and the legacy of the students that went to that school, and worked with the city to be able to raise funds to restore the school back to its former glory. And they have since succeeded in that, and it's wonderful. You can make appointments, it's by appointment now because of COVID, but to go see it. And they have collected different artifacts from students who went there, different books. They've had reunions there from students who went to school back during those times, and they have signatures from them. And it's just wonderful. It's a wonderful educational learning experience. But the donor, or, you know, this woman who kind of led the charge on fundraising to restore the school, didn't want it to end with just the building. She wanted to make sure that not only were they honoring the legacies of the students who had gone there, and that was their only opportunity for education, but she wanted to ensure that African-American students in Canton today and tomorrow also had the means to pursue their dreams. So she has established what is currently an acorn fund, so it's not a fully fledged endowment yet. She's got 5 years to build it up, but it's called the Lincoln Colored School Endowment. So it will honor the lives of the students who went to the school while providing funding for students, African-American students in the Canton School District, to participate in extracurricular activities or just other enrichment opportunities that they might not otherwise be able to afford.
This is so critically important because think of your children when they see a phonograph player. They don't know what it is. Or an old-fashioned phone. They don't know what it is. Thank God that most six-year-old African-American children in the United States have no concept or clue what a colored school is. But it's important that they do understand that there was such a time in our history, and that there's a lesson to be learned from that, and that lesson can be shared across all racial and cultural, because we're still segregated in many ways, not maybe by race, but by other things. And so it's important to look back and say, this is why this happened. I love that idea. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the acorn. I think a lot of times when people hear community foundation, they say, oh, well, that's for rich folks, so tune out. I'm not interested. But some of your best funds have come from people that nobody around here would say they were rich. They lived a good life. They maybe had a comfortable retirement, but they weren't like, you know, dripping with diamonds.
Absolutely not.
And so these acorn funds are a great way for people to make small donations, come together in aggregate and turn into something really beautiful. And then it's not enough just to restore the building, but to have money in the future for programming so that the building can be utilized for what it was intended to be.
That's right. So this particular donor knew that African-American students faced a lot of barriers to achieving their educational goals, but she didn't want financial issues to be one of those barriers. So this fund is just one way that she can help remove that barrier of you know, the financial barrier. So with this fund, it's just really, I just love it. I think it's so neat because it's honoring those students of yesteryear, honoring the struggles that they went through to achieve an education in this tiny cramped building when they were sharing books and just
where separate but equal was may have been
right.
The law of the land, but no place in the world was it separate but equal. And that's why Plessy v. Ferguson was overruled by Brown v. Board of Education.
Yes. So honoring that, you know, making sure that we don't forget about that history, but providing this opportunity for students of the future through an endowed fund. And again, this is an acorn fund. So you can start an acorn fund with as little as $1,000. And then you have 5 years to build it up to the fund minimum of $15,000. So it provides a really nice entry point. It's not as scary as, you know, writing the big check right there. It gives you time to build and do it on your own time. But the goal is by the end of that 5 years, you'll have it. And it is there. It is a legacy. It's permanent. And it will continue to generate funds and replenish itself for years to come.
Okay. We're talking with Catherine Meckes about the Community Foundation. You mentioned the Acorn Fund and how whatever you'd like to do, and this, again, is an education project that doesn't have anything to do with a scholarship for a certain career or anything. It's about educating people in your community. So many groups years ago, before the Community Foundation, they wanted to do something, so they'd start a trust or an endowment. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is you have to have a board of directors, you have to file paperwork. It's really a pain in the patoot. And so many people now have taken existing foundations and rolled them under your umbrella. And there's a lot of great reasons to do that. And one of them is, as we all know, when we invest, if I go to the bank and I say, here's my net worth, I'm worth $100, you know, what can you do for me? They're like, well, we can help you with this. If I walk in and say I'm worth $100 million, the bank president comes out and says, may I get you a cup of coffee?
Yeah.
And so aggregate, each fund is kept separate. You don't mix the money together in the sense that if it's for education, it's for education. If it's for, you know, buying materials for something, or if it's for the Girl Scouts or for Notre Dame High School, they don't mingle the money. But aggregate, you get some great investments.
That's right. So as far as tracking the grants and you know, the fund accounting, yes, those are all accounted for separately. So we know how much this one has to go out on grants each year, we know, et cetera. But for the purpose of investing, like you mentioned, those are invested, they are pooled together, so we're able to offer a greater return than if you were to do it on your own. So that is a wonderful advantage of working through the Community Foundation, not to mention, like you said, you get the joy of giving and putting your name on something, or not. I mean, we have several anonymous funds from folks who want the joy of giving but don't want the notoriety of it.
Well, sometimes I know one fund that's anonymous that I used to get money from when I was in the fund development world. They didn't want everybody coming
exactly.
And asking them for money. So they were separate. They may have rolled into you by now because it's been a long time ago. And it was like, we'll we will tell you we have money to give you.
Right.
But we're not interested in you telling everybody this is where we got the money,
yes,
because we don't want other people coming and asking.
That's right. Again, so it really runs the gamut of what you want to achieve in terms of what type of fund we're going to set up and how we're going to design it, and then in terms of how much notoriety you want. And there's different levels of anonymity as well. But regardless, you start that fund and you get to experience the joy of giving, and we handle the headache of the back end. And it's not a headache, it's wonderful. I mean, when you
right.
When you get to work with people to give back, it's the best. We love our jobs at the Community Foundation. We think they're the best jobs in the world. So, but yes, it's wonderful because you get to experience that reaching your financial and your charitable goals, but you don't have to worry about all the details and the paperwork. We handle that. You can, skipping around a little bit, a donor advised fund is a really popular way to do that, because the donor can still be very involved in the grant making. They can recommend.
If you're alive still, you can
yes.
do that, or you can name a designate, I guess.
Yes, so you could have it as donor advised to where you're very actively involved in where you want the grants to go during your lifetime, and then it could roll over into a specific type of fund upon your death, mm-hmm. So it's still going on. But, you know, you can say, oh, I saw this really cool program going on, and I'd like to make it help them out. I'd like to make a grant. So you write a recommendation in, our board approves it, and off the check goes to help that program. But you don't have to make that final decision of exactly the one thing you want to impact at that time. You can have that flexibility.
Yeah, and that's really, you know, again, I was just watching something the other day that said too many choices paralyzes us. Sometimes it would just be like, I know there's 20 good things. Pick one. Pick a good thing based on these criteria. Please don't allow me. It's kind of like being the judge of a baby contest. Nobody ever wants to say yes to that. After you do that once, you realize that's a losing proposition. We're going to take our final break. When we come back, our remaining moments about the Community Foundation. And remember, you can always go to mycommunityfoundation.org. Maybe you sit on a board. Maybe you've got something that you're involved in that's a not-for-profit or a charitable work. They might be able to fund you, or you might be able to fund them. It's a two-way street. Go explore. Well, this is a note to all the solitary men and solitary women out there. Perhaps you don't know what to do with your family legacy since your family has dwindled. You can start a community foundation fund and make sure that the things you cared about in your lifetime are carried on after you're gone, long after you're gone. Thank goodness some people did that years ago, because they were able to distribute money for the emergency that was COVID-19. I guarantee you, Catherine Mackus will be my witness, nobody set up a fund to deal with COVID-19 since it wasn't even invented or thought of. But they thought of setting up a fund in case local organizations had some kind of problem. And you've been able to tap into that, and that's been wonderful.
Absolutely. We are so grateful and just so, I would say the unrestricted funds are, you know, they're kind of like a unicorn. You know, they don't come around very, it's very mystical. Most people, when they want to give, they have something specific. And understandably, they love children. They want to help feed the hungry. They care about a certain school. But it takes a certain vision to entrust an organization with your dollars and say, you know, I don't know what the needs and opportunities are going to be in 5 years, let alone 50 years. And so they entrust us to make those decisions on their behalf in their name. And so we're just so grateful for those funds. And those unrestricted funds allow us to, generally what we do is our competitive grant program is how we distribute those. And we ask for applications from nonprofits throughout the region, say, what do you need? What's going on? What opportunities do you have? And we have a committee that reviews those. This year, I think I can speak broadly that it's been unique. And so our board did decide to take a portion of our unrestricted earnings this year and create a COVID-19 relief fund for nonprofits to help continue their work, because nonprofits are really the heartbeat of our region. They're the conduit. They're the ones who get those funds out and work with the individuals who need
boots on the
yes,
ground.
Absolutely.
It's
so
not easy to sit in an ivory tower in Chicago, Illinois, and know what they need at the corner of 8th and Jefferson in Quincy, Illinois.
That's
and
right.
So local people help make these local decisions. It's all about local, local, local.
Yes,
we're learning that all the time.
Absolutely. Folks more and more are looking to local ways to give.
Okay. So if you'd like to give, or if you'd like to know more about how your agency or a group you're involved in can get money, go to mycommunityfoundation.org. That's simply mycommunityfoundation.org. And if you, you don't have to be a millionaire. If you want to go and win $1 million with Regis Philbin, that's fine. But you don't have to be a millionaire to plan today to have a permanent legacy. And Catherine and her staff would love to talk to you about that. So thank you again. We'll talk again, I guess.
Yes, absolutely.
In a month. And maybe in a month things will look very, very different. But maybe they won't. But one thing that will be the same, the Community Foundation will be here to help you. Hey, the Arts Quincy Organization won a prestigious American prize. I mean, best in the country. So they'll be my guests tomorrow morning, and we'll talk about that and every other thing that's going on in the world.